Stove. Good evening, and welcome to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, Chinatown's most robust micro-broadcasting radio solution. I'm Nicholas Miller, and I'm here to apologize. Many of you listeners out there will recognize tonight's guest, as tonight's show has been previously recorded. We are sorry. But my tireless co-host, Steve Cato, is currently on a much-needed vacation and is climbing the Swiss Alps. So we've dug deep into the Talking Show archives to bring you a voice from the distant past. So please, everyone, calm yourselves. The show must go on. And welcome, Willem de Ridder.
One of these buttons turns that thing on.
Yes.
Yes. Oops. Sorry. Welcome to the second install of The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio, broadcasting live from Chinatown in sunny Los Angeles, California. I am one of your hosts, Nicholas Miller.
Oh, hi, and I'm the other host, Steve Cato. Welcome to the second installment.
And I must say, Steve, you are wearing the most remarkable belt buckle I have ever seen. Jeez.
You're too kind.
Where did you get that thing?
Well, it's a good story. It's good that you ask. My significant other, Martha, she picked it up for me on a trip through Phoenix. The listeners at home, of course, can't see this belt buckle, but, it's got sort of a Southwestern motif, if you look at it one way, it's sort of got a thunderbird in a turquoise coming down. But if you look at it in another respect, it's like two hands reaching up. It's really something else. It's about the size of a baby's head or about that size, so it's quite, it's not as big around, of course, as a baby's head, but it's funny that you mentioned the belt buckle, but I thought for sure the main attraction when I got dressed this morning would be this incredible bolo tie that I'm wearing. I'm really shocked you didn't mention that, actually. Go with the belt buckle, Nick. Go with it. Yeah, why not?
Well, it looks great. I hope everyone enjoyed our last show with David Anton. What's that, Steve? It looks like you're itching to say something about David Anton.
Well, it's not really something about David Anton so much as it's, I don't know. I'm just sort of still bummed that you didn't notice my tie. I'm sorry. I apologize more to our listeners because I'm being awfully selfish about this tie. And I mean, that's not what a radio host is supposed to do, of course. I'm supposed to be here for you, the listener. Right, Nick?
Right. Okay. We have a real treat for you this time. The only Willem de Ridder. Steve, why don't you tell our listeners out there listening through deep, dark radio space a little bit about Willem de Ridder?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm back on the job now. I'm feeling good, doing well. Willem de Ridder's Dutch. He was early on associated with Fluxus and also produced lots of, I understand them to be pornographic magazines in Holland, although, you know, I haven't seen any of these magazines myself. And, you know, knowing what I know about Holland, though, a pornographic magazine in Holland's got to be something, especially in the loose and wild period we call the 1960s. Since then, he's actually done a lot of this kind of thing that we're working on doing right now. Lots of radio work, lots of talking on the radio. So in a way, between the sort of live talking of David Anton and the expressly radiophonic talking of Willem de Ridder, we're sort of moving from the alpha to the omega of this talking domain that we as radio hosts are aiming for here.
Fantastic stuff. Well, sit back, relax, let go of your mind, and enjoy the smooth talking of Willem de Ridder.
Let's just ask where the water is the highest. He looked puzzled. He couldn't understand a word of it. He was clearly in a strange country. He knew all along, of course, after traveling for so long. But now he couldn't read a word. He couldn't understand anything. Just sounds. Just signs. The rest was perfectly clear. The expressions, the feelings, everything. His perception. He saw everything very clearly. I mean, there were trees, rocks, roads, people. Everything was there, normally. Except, not a word. His thoughts were his thoughts. He could not check them with others. He was not sure if he saw things alone, if he was the only one who saw them that way. And if you're alone, I mean, it didn't really matter because that evening, for example, it was very late, very dark, cold. There were pine trees, and he was waiting for the bus. And there were those old people, a man and a woman, dressed in long robes. Very unusual, but by now he was used to it, and there was not a word they could exchange. Yet, one thing was sure, they were all waiting for the bus. The two had made a little fire in the corner of the bus station. In this country, that would be next to impossible. The police would be there any moment to arrest you. But he was very grateful for the fire. It was warm and smoky, and he was sitting very near, warming his hands together with those people, and there was a very powerful feeling. And they tried, of course, to exchange words. But it could be. Thank you. at the words Lucky. As they look out of those voluptuous lips, the little bits, you know, it's the little waist, you know, and those eyes, those horny eyes. I mean, I'm not immediately. Thing that I don't even know how to describe, but I think it's
It
magic print. When I heard that story, the baby, you know, he was being cold. I was really back. I didn't know. He was in the country. Nobody took him anyway. They were too difficult that I couldn't understand. Feel anything because they tell themselves that they don't burn and they don't feel anything, and if they believe it 100%, just like the guy believes that he's gonna freeze. You know, a friend of mine, he told me an unbelievable story that made it all even clearer. I mean, he went with his old mother, a frail old lady. She's very nice, but very frail. I mean, she's 85, and he went across America with her. Can you imagine at that age? She's a very powerful lady. Not strong, but she's there, you know. I mean, she... On a certain moment, something went wrong with the car. So he stepped out of his car and looked under it, and he took his jack, you know, he jacked up the car, and he lay under it. And then something terrible happened. The jack broke. And the entire car fell on his breasts, and he went like that, you know, he went. And that frail old lady ran to the car with both hands, lifted the enormous monster up. He could crawl out of it, and she dropped it because she couldn't lift the car like that. There's no way. And she knew for sure she couldn't. But right at that moment, she did. Anyway. And then I realized, you know, that I'm not the only one that's really bothered, you know, by thinking that there's so much problems with it. If I can call them problems. But that my entire body is severely distressed by the all the ideas, by the thinking, you know, the drunken monkey brain that goes on and on and on with all the thoughts and ideas and ideas and beliefs and persuasions and things we've learned and convinced about, and you know, those things. Culture, we call it. Culture. So, devil they're talking about. Imagine if the body gets in real danger. When it really starts to count. You know what the first thing is that the body does? Is stop the mind. It stops all thinking. Because the thinking only interferes. It's the biggest disturbance ever. It's one of those transmitters that they use to disturb other transmissions. You know what I mean? So the body can handle all that. Normally there's all these severe problems, all those ideas, and beliefs, and persuasions, and convictions, and how do you call them? But if the shit hits the fan, the body can use that shit, you know? I mean, forgive me all the words, strong words, I mean, I don't want to really insult you, but the first thing the body does is stop the thinking. It just acts. Thing is that when you are in danger, you run like you've never run before in your life. You never thought it possible that you could run so fast. You know what I mean? You're running like a devil. You're running like you never believed. You were never convinced of that you could run like that. You jump over fences so high that if you later see them back, you can't believe that you did it. And you could never repeat it. Because you think you can never do it. And if you think you can never do it, you cannot do it. And that troubles me. I'm sitting here in this garden. It's an ancient garden on a mountain. It belonged to a painter. Famous painter. He lived last century and he painted a painting that I grew up with. It was in the back of my classroom. That's where I saw it for the first time. I remember very well the day I came in as a young kid. I had to go to school. I hated it with a passion. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to sit behind a table. I wanted to play outside. I was never bored. I was so busy. I had so much fantasy. My parents said and my friends said and I believed it. And it was. I was so enthralled. And here in this terrible school, I had to sit down. I couldn't move. I couldn't even look out of the window. I couldn't dream away. I had to be and I had to look at this weird piece of paper with all this abstract signs on it, symbols that I didn't understand. And I know by the time I would understand them, I had paid a high, high price. But anyway, the day I came in that classroom, I looked at that painting. I was hanging in the back of it. My heart stopped. It was a small island. And on the island were those high trees, the same ones that are standing here. Cypresses. Candles, they look like green, dark, eternal trees, long, erect, potent, silent. There's force. And the small island was filled with those trees. On the both sides of the island were rocks. It was actually not really an island, it was a big rock in the sea. And in the rocks were cut out corridors, entrances to basements, staircases, down in dark halls, eerie. And those dark trees, those cypresses made it so dark. You could dream away in the dark of those tall green trees, surrounded by grottos, by entrances to basements filled with the dead, coffins filled with bodies that were not necessary anymore here on this earth. The sinking machine had stopped and was put in a coffin in a wooden casket, and one of those caskets was standing on a rowing boat. It was covered with a white cloth, and before it, looking at it, standing erect in the rowing boat, was a white figure. He couldn't see if it was a man or a woman. The head, the body was all covered in white. And there was a lonely rower in the back of the boat. And he was steering the boat towards the island of the death. Such a silent scene. The last journey on the silent ZCC towards an unknown destination. Was the white figure standing erect in the boat true body that never saw it? And was the sinking machine the leftover that you didn't use anymore, since you didn't have to be on this earth anymore, in that casket? Or I remember all the feelings that went through me when I saw that painting. It amazed me to no end. And many times I was sitting in the classroom and I peeked around my shoulder to see a glimpse of it. Sometimes a glimpse was enough. Just seconds was enough to fill my entire day with that image. I grew up with it. I grew up with that image. It meant so much to me. It filled a void. You know, that was slowly filled in by ideas that say incessantly fired at me in that classroom day after day. Many of those ideas I had to learn by heart and repeat them the next day. And they gave me a low number if I couldn't. And with the low number, automatically they delivered bad feelings. If I got a high number, then I was trained to feel great. So after a year, they could say to me, 8. And I said, 8. And she said to me, 4. I said, oh no, 4. Can you imagine? I was trained like a dog. She trained me. All she had to do was tell 4 or 3, even worse, or 2 or 0. I could die. 0. How could I face my parents? And if they want to bring me in heaven, all they had to do was say 10. Or 8. 8. You know what I mean? I was trained like a puppy dog. I believed it. It became my conviction. It started to work. And the body delivered as a good friend automatically all the feelings. Hmm. And now I'm talking about it in front of this statue of this satyr, this lusty non-thinker, here in the house of the painter that painted that very painting that I grew up with in the time that I was trained to the thinking machine that I am now. Does it mean that I can really think what I want? And that if I change my idea and if I believe it 100%, that my body and everything around me delivers automatically the experience? Does that mean that I am the creator of my very life? That the situation I am in right now is exactly what I wanted to create? Oh no. Does that mean that if I tell myself I will never die, that I will never die? That if I believe that I can fly, that I can fly, or walk through this stone wall, or I know you're listening. Don't worry about it now. It's just that I needed this for a moment, you know. There's nothing to worry about. Life goes on, you know, as usual. Nothing wrong. Nothing right either. I think I pour myself a wine. It's very weird, you know. Like, you know, one thought leads to the other. It's amazing what people can think. When you start thinking, just like you get really. I've been together with friends, you know. We've talked hours, you know, incessantly the whole night, you know. We've discussed the entire universe. We solved all problems. You know, it's amazing what you. But then again, you know, like there's certain territories you don't enter. You know what I mean? Certain things you don't really talk about. You know? It's not done. You automatically don't do it. You know? It's like it's probably like. Like getting an A or a B or a C or a D or a 10 or a 0. You do everything in your life not to get that 0 anymore. You don't want that feeling. But why not? It's weird, you know, like I'm standing here all alone in this garden, talking into this weird black object in my hand, right? And the only reason I'm doing it is because I have this idea that you are listening. If I wouldn't have that thing in my hand, but this machine to record my words, and I would do the same, I would have a quite different idea about myself. If somebody would come in the neighborhood and caught me talking like this without any excuse in my hand, like a microphone and a recorder to, what would I say? What would I think about myself? What would be the idea about myself? Hmm. Strange, isn't it? Anyway, I'm glad you listened. And, we'll talk again. You know? I'm sure we'll talk again. And, if you, no, don't worry. I don't want to ask you anything. Let's keep in contact, please. You know, whatever you think, eh? I don't mind. I like you. You know, I like you. Anyway, it's hard to get those words over my lips. It felt good, eh? It felt good. Thank you very much for listening. I see you again.
Wow. Thanks a lot for that, Willem. That was really great. I mean,
yeah.
Really great.
Bravo. Really sensational.
And, you know, I agree. You're right. It is hard to get words out. I mean, they don't come easy. But those were really nice words. Really nice. How'd you feel about it, Steve?
Oh, I couldn't agree more, Nicholas. Willem, thank you for coming in today. That was really sensational. It's almost like just through being here in the studio and just through the power of speech, you were able to take us to a coastal area to, you know, you could almost hear the waves. It was really incredible. I've never heard anything like that before in my life.
Yeah. That's nice. But what did you think about it?
Well, I don't know. In keeping with what Willem had to say, I think thinking about it's the last thing we should do. Am I not right, Willem? Yeah, he's nodding over there. I mean, the worst thing you can do is to think about it, to allow your conditioned response to govern your approach to this material. I think you should just sort of lie there and take it. Don't you, Nick?
Yeah, right up my alley. Great, well, thanks, everyone, for tuning in to K-Chung Radio, and we really hope to see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.